Hello and welcome to this premium video. Thank you for joining us. I am Harry, your host, joined today by Luca.
Hello there.
And the Dark Lord of the Sith himself, Dr. Nima Parvini. Thank you very much for joining us today. And we're going to be talking about the Star Wars prequel trilogy and the reassessment and reevaluation of the film's quality that's been going on over the past few years, the discourse leading up to that, and just generally the overall quality of them. And I think all three of us are going to be in agreement that these films have been unfairly maligned. The criticism that was applied to them early on when they had been released and in the early years of internet discourse was bad faith and very unfair. And that actually, when you reevaluate them and watch them with a more objective eye today, they not only hold up much better than you expect, but there are many arguments to be made that these are fantastic films. And just to give a little backstory for this, so over the past few weeks, I just decided over the Christmas period to rewatch the full Star Wars films, and I decided to do them as you are supposed to do, as George Lucas intended, which is to watch them in episode order, episodes 1 through 6. And I went through a phase when I was a teenager, as many did, of having watched the Plinkett reviews around the time that they came out. My friends recommended that I watch them, and I was a stupid, impressionable teenager and had been told by all of them that they're really great film reviews, they're great critiques, they'll make you see the films in a whole different light. And because of the way that the reviews were presented, and because of the way that it was a new form of criticism that I'd not seen online before, I went along with it. But it's been so many years removed from it now that I thought I'll give them another fair chance. And not only did I go into them and find that I really enjoyed them, I found that I enjoyed the prequels more than the originals.
I agree with this. Yes.
I genuinely appreciated them more than the originals, both in terms of their construction, in terms of the overall narrative they were trying to construct and trying to tell, and the greater themes that they were discussing as well, which are interesting and complex on a level the originals were not.
Perhaps controversially as well, I would even dare suggest that the characters of Obi-Wan, Anakin, Padme, these are really underappreciated characters. People always just go to Han, Luke, and Leia as the iconic trio. But I think that there are many really, really good characters in the prequels as well that are, yeah, overshadowed.
Well, I agree, and there's a lot of nuance to their arcs and motivation, which is skipped over. Now, Nima, again, thank you very much for joining us on this. I'd like to give you a moment to introduce your thoughts on this, because you said when you joined the call this is one of your favorite subjects to discuss, and you have been a prequel defender for years up to this point. I've seen for years going back on Twitter and elsewhere, you've spoken about the prequels and you've been carrying the torch for them for a long time.
Yeah, and also for my sins, I am the principal pioneer online of what I would call Palpatine revisionism, which we can get onto as well, because, I mean, in my view, you know, I mean, I talked to you in the past about Shakespeare and his great history cycle.
Yes.
Okay. And when I used to lecture on the history plays, I'd always say that, much like George Lucas, Shakespeare wrote the history plays out of order, right? He started with the Henry VI, and then he wrote the prequel tetralogy
right.
afterwards.
Of course, yes.
So Henry IV and Richard II, right? So but they are a kind of masterpiece of political playwriting, okay? And then we can go forward and look at the novel form, War and Peace, and the great political novels. And for me, the prequel trilogy is our equivalent of Shakespeare's history plays or War and Peace or something like that. It is the political masterpiece of our time, told over a series of films. And as a three film cycle, I think that Lucas, and now there is some things to say about George Lucas. I don't think he's perfect. He's a boomer and all these sort of stuff. He's got liberal priors. But despite all of that, he is dealing with such deep themes and such important political themes that even despite himself, he actually ends up telling the story of what Polybius called the anacyclosis, something I discuss in my book, The Prophets of Doom, where you actually get to see a republic in decay, a bureaucracy that is atrophied, a Jedi order that has started to defend something that is arid and spiritually bankrupt, and the need for a new order to be established, represented by Palpatine. Now, because George Lucas is a boomer and has like boomer values and so on, he sees this as a bad thing in some sort of way. But I think that even despite that, the films are well made enough and well written enough that these things that I'm talking about are explored in real and quite surprising depth. And when I say quite surprising depth, I am somebody who has kept spreadsheets on the construction of the Jedi Council over time. Okay. So like in the Phantom Menace, you know, you've got Yaddle sitting there, yeah, and Yari O'Koof, he's the one with the long neck. Okay.
Oh yes.
And you can actually watch the Jedi Council decline in real time. Okay. You can actually watch it decline. And you know, people elevated to the council clearly have no business being there. So, but by the time you get to Revenge of the Sith, the Jedi Order itself, right, has kind of, I mean, what is it even defending by that point? Okay, it's almost, and what Lucas does is he actually gives you an insight into it. We watch Obi-Wan Kenobi go to that library and deal with, do you remember that woman with a little pin in her hair?
Oh, yes.
The librarian.
The clones, and yes.
Yeah, in a second. Now, everybody derided that sequence. They said, oh, it was boring and so on. And, you know, if you watch the Lucas commentaries, he's like, yeah, we were worried that this bit was going on too long, but it was important because one of the reasons it's important is the Jedi had so lost their way. They'd so lost their way that now this woman who's meant to be, let's not forget, she's meant to be a Jedi. She's meant to be a keeper of this spiritual order. She is devolved into being a mere bureaucrat, an empty suit. Okay. And in a way, this, a lot of the problems that people have with the prequels are things like, you know, Yoda's midichlorian speech. Okay. But if you think about it in these terms, yeah, the Jedi stuff is going to feel less special and demystified because they've lost sight of what matters. And in a sense, I mean, the whole trilogy is meant, the whole saga is meant to be about Anakin bringing balance to the Force, okay? But let's not forget, I mean, I think the prequel trilogy are as much Palpatine's story as they are Vader's story. Palpatine is a kind of great man of galactic history, if you want to put it this way.
He's the primary driver of all of the events that happen in the prequel. So there is an argument to be made that he is the protagonist in that his actions are what cause everything to happen.
Absolutely. But you see, the thing is, in order for there to be balance in the Force, quote unquote, Palpatine needed to do those things. If you think about it in terms of Thomas Carlyle, you know, he says of the Bourbon order, the old ancient regime, it had gone rotten. The elites had become corrupted. It needed to be cleansed with fire. Now you can say, well, all sorts of bad things happened in the French Revolution, but the fact is it needed to be swept aside, right? Napoleon, good or bad, he did a function for France. It needed to happen. And in a way, you could say, well, even if some of the things that Palpatine ends up doing are evil, quote unquote, and we can debate that, it kind of like, in order for the prophecy to be fulfilled, that needed to happen because the state of the Jedi Order that we find it under Yoda, I mean, think of the stuff that Yoda does. What's Yaddle even doing on the council? Nepotism. It's DEI. But anyway,
the fun thing I find about that is that I've seen so many people since I've put out my takes on Twitter that generated a wild amount of controversy, and I do need, as we get into this, to talk about the fans and the culture that emerged around the films and the prequels as well, because the amount of investment that some people have in their personal egos in hating the films being the right opinion is absurd to me. One of the complaints that I've seen is that people say that, yes, it demystified the Jedi Order, but that having watched the original trilogy first, they had in their minds this noble idea of kind of a Knights of the Round Table situation where the Jedi were infallible. But rewatch the originals again, right? And I'm not just saying this with the hindsight of the prequels existing now to give you all of this backstory, but we already know by the time of the originals, without the prequels, the Jedi Order failed. Whatever it was that they were trying to uphold in the Galactic Republic had failed. How do we know this? Well, because it's an empire now, and because Obi-Wan has been exiled to the far reaches of the corners of the galaxy, and Luke Skywalker, being Anakin Skywalker's son, has had to be hidden from him because his father fell to the dark side. So we already know that they failed, right? And then look at the actions of Obi-Wan and Yoda in Empire and in Return of the Jedi. Right? I'm sorry, they suck. Their advice to Luke is terrible because they are still going with this kind of outdated, irresponsible idea, which is the same thing that helped Anakin to fall to the dark side in the prequels, that you must divest yourself of all personal attachments, all personal relationships. You must become a spiritual nomad and a hermit. Only then will you be able to achieve your destiny. Luke proves them wrong. It's through nurturing his relationship with Anakin at the end of the Return of the Jedi that Anakin is able to be pulled back into doing the right thing and destroying the Emperor.
And to protect his sister.
And to protect his son and his sister. And then by the time you go back to the prequels and you see that this is the same mindset, this is the same behavior that pushed Anakin away from them. Because what you see, and people like to say the writing is one note, the characters were terrible, there's no character arcs. One of the most concerningly stupid things I've ever heard people argue is that Anakin is a Mary Sue in the prequel trilogy, which is absurd because he is conflicted, he makes poor decisions,
he's reckless,
he's pulled between different worlds. The people forget that a Mary Sue is not just somebody who is powerful, it's somebody who also makes the right decision all the time and is loved by everybody around them and shapes the world to their will. That's what the Mary Sue originally was. So it's just a complete misuse of the term. But Anakin in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith is pulled between the advice of, well, the tradition of the Jedi, this whole idea of divest yourself of your feelings, get rid of your attachments, and Palpatine, who is saying that, no, you should care about your feelings. I understand why you are worried, especially in Revenge of the Sith. He's very paternal towards Anakin, whereas there's that scene in Revenge of the Sith. Anakin's already been, he's taken away from his mother in Phantom Menace. The Jedi do nothing, the Republic does nothing to solve the slavery problem on Tatooine. They just let it happen. So he's taken away from his mother at 9 years old, which clearly the attachment issues traumatize him. Attack of the Clones, he has premonitions and dreams that his mother will die that turn out to be true because she dies in his arms. And then you get to Revenge of the Sith, he's having those same premonitions and dreams about Padme, who he cares about, who he loves, she's his wife, and he knows that his dreams come true. And so he goes to Yoda, and he doesn't say exactly that that's what's going on, but he says, I'm having all of these issues, I have these doubts and fears. And what does Yoda say? Basically, don't worry about it, bro.
Suck it up.
Yeah, just forget about it.
Yeah.
Who cares? If you're going to be one with the Force, just like meditate on it and you'll feel fine. Whereas he goes to Palpatine with those same issues, and Palpatine says, I understand your fears. I understand the fear of losing. If you join me, you can actually maybe find a way to fix those problems, to prevent the people that you love from dying. So I was watching them and going, yeah, the Jedi Order is corrupt. They're in league with a corrupt Republic. There's a scene in Revenge of the Sith where, you know, Palpatine is saying they're going to usurp my power to Anakin, and it's presented, some people present it like they were just being he was just being paranoid or lying to Anakin. No, Mace Windu says at one point, we're going to have to usurp Palpatine and take power to, quote unquote, ensure a peaceful transfer of power.
And like they ask Anakin to spy on him as well.
Yeah, like those ever work out. So if I was in Anakin's position, I would say, yes, there is a conspiracy against Palpatine. Mm. Palpatine actually does care about me more than this ancient order that's supposed to be so spiritual and in touch with the with the force in the galaxy. I would have sided with Palpatine in Anakin's position as well, frankly. And I think the film presents a very strong and nuanced case, which people just completely ignore. So there's actually a great through line from the prequels to what you see in the originals. And that's what I think. That's why I think that as a full six film piece, the prequels improve the originals. It's a full story in that George Lucas wanted to tell it as a full story.
Just one thing to out. Sorry, Nima. Just one thing to add as well, what you were saying about the corruption of the Jedi Order as well. I feel like this is such an important part of why Qui-Gon Jinn is at the beginning of the story, right? Because when you have all of these Jedi like Mace Windu, like DEI hires, like Yaddle, and, you know, people who become institutionally captured, which even happens to Kenobi, right? Kenobi, if it had followed Qui-Gon's teachings, would have stopped chasing the approval of the institutions and just followed the will of the Force. And so in the, because really you're looking at, what is it? The Republic has stood for 1,000 years, 10,000 years, long, long time, right? And so we are looking at it absolutely at the end, you know, late Republic stage. And so we see all of the rot and the corruption. And so I think it really makes sense to have that one Jedi character in there who actually shows you the ideal of what a Jedi should be. And that is someone who rises above the politics, who is entirely at service to the will of the Force.
Who is happy to defy the council if it's what he knows
absolutely
right. And that's the tragedy of the end of The Phantom Menace. And why? Because
Qui-Gon could have been the father figure that Anakin was pushed to Palpatine. Like,
Obi-Wan was not ready.
No.
He was not ready. And that's part of why it is true. Obi-Wan failed him. He really did.
Yeah, no, this is a good point. And in fact, you said what I was going to say, which is that the film actually builds in the critique, okay? And it gives you key characters. Qui-Gon Jinn is one. Another one, let's not forget, is Count Dooku, who's clearly somebody with higher ideals, somebody who has become disillusioned genuinely
Qui-Gon's master
with the Jedi Order and with the Republic, which is why are the Jedi fending this rotten Republic? Okay, the films show us how much in decline. Like when Qui-Gon goes to see Watto, and he's like, "Well, we don't want your Republic credits here; they're not worth anything. Give me real money, because we can actually see the currency has become worthless." You know, in the outer rim. So I think Dooku is also put in there. As a kind of, because I don't think Dooku is a straightforward, this guy is just an evil so-and-so.
No.
He's clearly a noble character with ideals. And I think it's suggested that he may have been Qui-Gon's mentor.
He was,
He was Qui-Gon's master and Qui-Gon was his apprentice, which is probably why when there's the scene where Obi-Wan is being held captive by Dooku, Dooku says to him, Qui-Gon probably would have listened to me. Qui-Gon would have been able to see where I'm coming from. Because it's also implied in that Dooku is not working for Sidious purely because of the fact that he's a bad guy and wants what Palpatine wants. Like all Sith master-apprentice dynamics, the likelihood would have been that Dooku at some point would have tried to usurp Palpatine so that he could reform the Republic because he knew how corrupt it was. He just never got the opportunity because Palpatine got Anakin to take care of him before he could.
But this is something else I wanted to point to, right? The films also show us Palpatine running through different apprentices. First, there's Maul, gets rid of him. Then Dooku comes in, gets rid of him. Then he's got Anakin. Now, Anakin, after he has the fight with Obi-Wan, and gets cut in half, is a busted flush, right? Imagine you're Palpatine. You're invested in this apprentice. he's basically injured. Like, he's been cut in half. He hasn't got any legs anymore. Now, Palpatine could have just done away with him at that point, but he sticks with him, right? As it is shown in the film. Now, I know you can go to novels and comics and stuff where he's got 15 apprentices and so on. As you see it in the films, he doesn't get rid of, he sticks with Vader, it sticks with Anakin, which shows some sort of genuine care on Palpatine's half. This is something else that is worth mentioning when it comes to why it is the Republic fell and the order of Palpatine comes, is that you actually watch Palpatine and you see it in Anakin, but this is also happening at a kind of galaxy-wide level, right? Why would you live and fight and die for the Republic? And you actually see this problem. Yoda goes to that place and he's got, what does he enlist, the army of the clones or whatever?
Yes.
Oh yes. Right?
Mino. Yes.
Right. So they're already having problems with military recruitment, if you want to put it this way. Whereas Palpatine, when he comes in, he actually gives a meaning and a purpose and an order to people's lives. Okay. And I don't want to get too far away, but if you accept the Disney canon as well, you accept the sequels, you actually see what Leia and Han and Luke, right? They fail to build an order, right? They collapse the empire and they build nothing because they don't have, like, whatever those values of the old Republic were that led to the collapse in the first place. You can't build a new order on sand. It just falls apart again. And then you end up with the first order,
yeah.
comes in again afterwards. So to me, what is interesting in the films is that you actually see the reasons for the decline, and you see the reasons for why the new order succeeded, you know, at least initially, because people actually wanted to fight and die for Palpatine. He gave them something to believe in, whereas it was almost impossible. And the last thing I want to say is that, as well as Qui-Gon and Dooku as critique characters, Lucas also gives us a lot of examples of the Jedi having atrophy. Okay, I think the Banner, like, the kind of, is a Kai Adimundi, right? He is shown consistently as, like, the number three. You know, it's Yoda, Windu, and then there's Kai Adimundi. And he can't, like, they're sitting around, the dark side clouds everything. He's by the book. He can't think for himself. He doesn't follow the Force. You know, they've got all these rules. And they've clear, like, when I say they've lost their way, this is not me kind of reading the film against the grain. All of it is there. It's all given to us by the text. And I think we're meant to think these things as we're watching it. This is not shallow writing. This is, like, it's there.